The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
It's time for Capital Thinking, where we analyze the key policy, political, legal, and business issues that will shape America's future. Live from Washington, D.C., this is your unfiltered tour of the halls of power. Now, here's your host, Kevin O'Neill.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the first Capital Thinking of 2012. Hope everyone had a terrific holiday season. We're going to spend this show sort of previewing a variety of topics in the public policy legal space for 2012. We're joined for our first segment by two of our frequent guests, Nick Allard, the co-chair of the lobbying, political, and election law practice at Patton Boggs, and Vince Ferlicci, who is a former strategic advisor to a number of players in the Democratic-controlled Senate, who's now also at Patton Boggs. And we're going to talk with them a little bit about what's going on with Congress and the White House here in 2012. Guys, let me start by asking you, you have a Congress that's less popular than poison ivy. What exactly would you be doing if you were advising the Republicans and Democrats on how to avoid a wave of being tossed out on anti-incumbent sentiment here in 2012?
Well, they've got to do something. And so despite there's many forces playing towards inaction, you know, typically the fourth year in a cycle, legislative cycle, presidential cycle, there's less activity. And as we head into the election, you know, things kind of slow down and you'd expect partisan bickering to kind of make each side want to prevent the other side from getting any achievements. At the same time, what the incumbents on both sides of the aisles have in common is that they both need to have something that they can run on to say that they've done. And also, there's a number of things that they're going to need to start working on almost, you know, right away. So you can expect that, you know, there's some basis for at least some core of the Congress to want to do something.
Vince, let me turn to you to answer that question. I mean, President Obama looks like he's going to run against Congress, but at least half of Congress is controlled by his party. What do Democrats have to do to avoid saying it's not me, it's them?
Well, I mean, it's very hard, very complicated, because people don't see it that way. They don't see a broken down House and a Senate out there. They just see, you know, they just see both parties fighting with each other. And I think Nick is absolutely right, and that they need to do something, and they need to do it in somewhat of a conciliatory way. They need to do something and prove they can do something that doesn't have to end in the final round of a boxing match where it's you know, it's a cliffhanger, you know, three overtimes and what's going to happen. I think people have such a low opinion because they simply just can't do the basic things in keeping the government running on time without it being dramatic and being so confrontational. And I think that they'll have a chance right outside the box here to do that, of course, because this tax payroll extension expires at the end of February. And so we'll see right out of the box. They don't have much time at all because, again, as Nick said, I mean, this thing is done pretty soon. You've got, once you get to July 4th, you've pretty much gotten to the end where then August comes and they've got party conventions August and September, and then there you are. So they only have, you know, 24 weeks here, probably six and a half months to try to do anything.
I love how it's January 5th, and we're already telling people that they don't have much time.
Right out of the blocks, you know, Kevin, something to keep an eye on as a bellwether in terms of how the year is going to run is whether the extension on the payroll tax, how that's handled. Now, if they get a 10-month extension and, you know, get through the year, you know, that would be a sign of something that, you know, incumbents could run on and say that they've taken care of as opposed to the last fiasco, frankly. But then once they get past that, what do they do?
I mean, I hear the Republicans talking a little bit about significant tax reform. It doesn't seem like entitlement reform is going to be on deck in this year, even though a divided Congress is sort of the best time to do that. So let me ask each of you guys, tell me three things you think the parties could agree on and actually work on to get done in this short window they have between now and, say, July 4th. Vince, I'll throw it to you first.
Well, I think the payroll tax extension is one of them. I think that they found a nice kitty of money by taking fees from mortgages that are sold by Fannie and Freddie to fund it as an offset, and they'll tackle that again to avoid having to make hard decisions on tax revenue offsets and raising taxes. I think besides that, the only thing else that I would see potentially would be some type of legislation that might go towards Fannie and Freddie reform. I know that sounds insane in the political election year, but I think the White House might be cooking up some ideas that might be palatable to the Republicans and show that they're making some progress on that and cleaning up that mess and sort of in resolution trust corporation type format.
Nick, what about you? What else do you think might be on the legislative agenda?
Well, first of all, there's the big SOPA fight, the Stop Online Piracy fight, which is a fight between the content providers in Hollywood and privacy advocates. But that's really the other side is really dominated by the, you know, online businesses who want a complete internet freedom. And that is teed right up, and that fight will go on the first month, first 6 weeks. So that will be addressed by the Congress. Something else that needs to be addressed is online privacy and online security, and those bills are also teed up. And so there's likely to be and there's significant pushing on that from both the Senate and the House. So that's something that, whether they get to final legislation or not, there'll still be a lot of activity. The security side of that equation, we may not have, sadly, the luxury to deal with it because anybody that's involved in this will tell you the cyber hacking that's going on in terms of attacks on our country's businesses and institutions that are coming from outside and abroad from various different threats, criminal, terrorist, military espionage and others are incredible. And so we may have a continued escalation of the number of events that we have to react and address. And finally, sort of in that high-tech space, there's a number of spectrum bills and spectrum initiatives which are being pushed primarily by Senator Rockefeller that will be teed up and will move forward. You know, it's more than 10 years since 9/11, and we still haven't had the rationalization of spectrum available to first responders who need to talk to each other in the wake of events, and so that'll be addressed as well. On the health side, there's a lot percolating in Medicare, Medicaid issues, the doctor, so-called doctor fix, and so there's aspects on the healthcare side that Congress will be dealing with. In the meantime, people will be looking to the states to see how they're implementing the law, and of course, in March, we'll have a landmark argument before the Supreme Court on all aspects of the Health Care Reform Act, and the court's likely to make a decision, you know, in June or July on that. And then whatever the court decides is likely to spawn, you know, further action one way or the other. So those are just some of the areas where there will be some congressional activity, despite this being a presidential election year.
Well, let's turn to the presidential election year, and let me ask you guys. You know, we started with Hope and Change 4 years ago. It seems like the president may be running a significantly different campaign this time around. And how hard is it for him to run a big, bold ideas campaign? Vince, talk to me a little bit about the challenges you see for the White House in the year ahead.
Well, I mean, I think the challenge for them is going to be able to just sort of keep the intensity going within their supporters. I think, Their fundamental strategy that they used in 2008 that they're going to try to replicate is to get wring every single vote possible out of the base and out of every single place they can find inside of the Democratic Party. And so with the disappointment among the Democratic base, and I mean the base of folks out there, in the perceived lack of hope and change that has been produced in 3 years versus the expectations they had, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to do, especially, remember, it's a very challenging time once you get past the selection of the Republican or the opposition nominee and the party convention. So you could see if Mitt Romney were to win a nomination, but whether officially or fait accompli, come February or early March, that leaves, let's say, March, April, May, June, July, August, for sort of this dead space time for both candidates, but particularly challenging for the president, who has to energize and get his supporters ready for this battle, and that's a really long time. So that'd be my concern for him.
Nick, I got about 2 minutes left, so tell me about what you see the race for the White House doing and what the president has on tap this year.
Well, I think that the international scene is going to continue to dominate their attention. When I say that, I've skipped over the most obvious, which is jobs. I mean, the economy has got to work, and we have to show and make the case that jobs have been made, and there's a big basic debate from both sides on whether that's been accomplished, whether it's been zero job growth, or whether there's been 3 million, 4 million jobs created. But given that, the White House is going to be very preoccupied with the, you know, shocks from abroad, both financially and otherwise, that you're buffeting the country. And we constantly realize that we not only live in a interconnected world, but that it's a very dangerous and unsafe place. Dangerous in the economic sense, that we're very subject, even if we get some growth and recovery here, we're subject to economic downturns in Europe and in Asia. Also the financial and other losses caused by, you know, natural catastrophes. And then, you know, the uncertainty, look what's happened in North Korea, and that creates both an opportunity but some risk as well. So there's a lot going on. And the Middle East is a lot more unstable than it has been in recent memory, and it hasn't been very stable for a long time.
Yeah, that's a great segue. We're going to talk with our international affairs and national defense folks right after the break here. But we've been joined by Nick Allard and Vince Ferlicci talking about the congressional and White House agenda for 2012. We'll be back in just a minute with more Capital Thinking.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Entrepreneurial Insights is your weekly excursion into the world of business ownership. Presented by Sunbelt Business Brokers, the leading business brokerage and intermediary firm in the world, Entrepreneurial Insights will examine critical issues that impact both existing and prospective business owners. If you own or want to own a small business, listen for Entrepreneurial Insights with John Davies, Pino Bocinello, and Matt Ottaway, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
How do you feel about the future? Tune in each week for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life with host Kate Ebner. You can be a great leader by learning from the inspiring stories of amazing visionaries who are shaping our future. Everyone deserves to create their own vision, and Kate and her guests will share the tools that you need to make it happen. Make a weekly visit to the Voice America Business Channel for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Be inspired. Become inspiring.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, well, good afternoon, everybody. Happy New Year. I hope everyone is continuing to have a great holiday season. As we get ready for 2012, we wanted to take people around the world and talk a little bit about what's going to happen in the coming year. We're joined for this segment by the head of the Patton Boggs International Practice, Sovereign Representation, and National Security Practice Group. That's Frank Simoles and Jack Deshauer, both of whom have been frequent guests on the past here on Capital Thinking. And we're going to talk about trade issues and national security issues with them here over the next few minutes. Frank, let's start with you and talk to us a little bit about what you think the big trade-related headlines will be for the American government in 2012.
Sure, Kevin, and Happy New Year to you. I think the one big issue that will come up very soon is Russia. And remember, earlier this month, they became members of the World Trade Organization. In order for the U.S. to receive those benefits, we have to give them what's called permanent normal trade relations, PNTR, which we did for China about 10 years ago. That will take an act of Congress that will be modifying the Jackson-Vanik Amendment. I think the administration will have to give that a lot of push and a lot of visibility. They haven't done it yet, but again, in order for the U.S. companies to get the benefits, that vote will have to happen sooner rather than later. The administration said they would like to have action done before the Duma in Russia finishes their business. That would probably be in mid to late spring. So look for that early on. You'll also see some negotiations under the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We can talk about that in detail if you like, but those negotiations are scheduled to be concluded by the end of this year. Those are probably the two big issues.
What about anything on free trade agreements here in North America or even with South America?
Well, keep in mind, Kevin, the president's trade negotiating authority expired about 4 years ago. Now, under the law, Congress was able to use that authority to pass the trade agreements with Korea, Colombia, and Panama. Earlier this year, the administration needs that authority extended at some point. That probably will happen this year. I think it will happen. It may be limited to just the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But remember, the TPP includes not only Asian countries like Japan now and Australia, New Zealand, Vietnam, but also some countries in our hemisphere, including now Canada, Mexico, Peru, and Chile. So that will be a trade agreement, if it takes place, that will cover both sides of the Pacific.
Interesting, interesting. Jack, let's turn to you and talk a little bit about what's going to go on. Obviously, a huge year with what's happening, transitions for the United States in Iraq and Afghanistan. Walk us through what you think will be the headline national defense-related developments in 2012.
Well, I think while the withdrawal from Iraq after 10 years, almost 10 years of war, is a significant development, and will be debated, especially since we see now that the vacuum that the U.S. forces are leaving is being quickly filled by competing interests in Iraq. However, I think the headline here in the U.S. with respect to defense is going to be the future of the defense spending.
The sequestering process that was supposed to take place as part of the supercommittee the supercommittee didn't happen, so now sequestration is on the table, right?
Well, yes, and that's a major issue, but even without sequester, whether it happens or doesn't, the Department of Defense was already planning into the fiscal year 13 and the next 4 years after that defense budget a reduction of $498 billion. Sequester would add another $600 billion on top of that. But the $498 billion over the, that's projected over the next 10 years, with approximately $256 billion being taken out of planned defense spending for the next five fiscal years. The Department of Defense has been engaged in a full-scale strategy review led by the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Winterfield. They've had, I've heard, a dozen or so meetings at the White House that the president himself has attended. And so the president and the National Security Council and the entire national security apparatus has been deeply involved with the budget, with the strategy that drives these planned budget reductions. My understanding is that the Joint Chiefs will roll out the new strategy sometime in late January, followed by the budget release on the first Monday in February.
Well, as we start the new year, there seem to be, Jack and Frank, two real hot spots I want to ask you guys about how the United States government might shape their relationships with these hot spots. One is North Korea, where we're watching the transition to a new generation of basically a third generation of leadership under the same family there in that repressive regime. And then the other is the open question of what will happen in Iran, and whether or not that will reshape our military obligations and also our diplomatic obligations. But let's start with North Korea. Frank and Jack, what do you think is going to happen there in 2012?
Well, hopefully nothing will happen there in 2012. Because if something happens beyond the borders of North Korea, it's certainly going to involve U.S. forces. We have a can't off the top of my head recall the exact number of forces we still have on the ground in South Korea, but any attack on from the north on the south will certainly involve U.S. forces in Korea and being brought into theater in response. However, because of North Korea and the Chinese military buildup, I understand that the new military strategy that's driving the budget is going to be heavily focused on the Pacific. And in fact, with the Navy assets that are homeported on the Atlantic coast are actually going to be moved to rebalance the fleet so that 60 or 65% of the fleet will be in the Pacific and 35, 40% of the fleet will be on the Atlantic side. But going forward over the next 20, 30 years, clearly America's military strategy will remain focused on the Pacific, with CENTCOM obviously still focused on what's happening in South Asia.
Frank, yeah. Let me come back to you. We'll skip the Iran question for a moment. Well, I know one concern continues to be sort of the shaky status of European economies. What do you think in general will do to diplomatic relations with sort of those Western European democracies that the United States has long had very good relationships with on so many key issues? And what will it mean for us economically as well?
Well, Kevin, I think you're beginning to see some early reports of a tentative free trade agreement between the U.S. and the European Union. I think that is a long, long way off, and it won't be anything won't be happening on that very soon. But you're starting to see some initiatives to cooperate on trade policy between the U.S. and Europe. For example, in the Middle East, when you did mention Iran, the United States is now looking to rejuvenate a trade policy with our allies in the Middle East, and also in response to Arab Spring, to bolster trade with countries that are friendly or neutral leaning friendly with the United States. And they want to do that in conjunction with the European policy. So I would look in 2012 for a more cooperative, coordinated approach on trade and economic policy by the U.S. and the EU, particularly in the Middle East.
Interesting. Jack, let me come back to you. One other place we didn't talk about, and that is Pakistan. It seems like we have a very delicate evolution of our relationship there, given the events of the fourth quarter of 2011. Do you anticipate that that will continue to be a focus of the military command structure and the White House as well in 2012?
Yes. Pakistan remains a crucial player in that region. The U.S. has had a relationship with Pakistan since its formation after the British partitioned Pakistan from India. And despite the issues and differences between the U.S. and Pakistan at the current stage, our efforts need to remain focused on keeping Pakistan within the fold, so to speak.
Interesting. Well, we've been joined by Frank Smolas and Jack Deshauer, the head of the International Sovereigns, Foreign Representation, and National Defense Practice Group at Patton Boggs, talking a little bit about what might be to come in 2012. We'll be back right after this commercial break with more Capital Thinking.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. From Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. We are joined now by Stan Collender, one of our frequent guests. He's a partner at Corvus Communications, someone who has extensive experience in Washington dealing with all things related to the federal budget. Stan, welcome back to the show. I know I want to get you to mention later the revamping of your blog. I want to have you talk a little bit about that. But I want to start by asking you to give us your general outlook on the federal budget for 2012 and where you think things are headed, if the economy heads up or if the economy remains stagnant.
Let's start with the basic numbers. I'm expecting the deficit to go down from about $1.3 trillion this year to below $1 trillion next year. Well, that is the current year. That is fiscal 2012. That would be a 30% improvement. So that's not Nothing to sneeze at, but it still leaves a deficit close to $1 trillion. And while there'll be lots of discussion about it, actually discussion being a polite way for saying there's going to be a lot of screaming and yelling, I'm not really expecting anything new to happen on the budget until after the election, until a lame duck session. I don't see how Congress is going to agree to anything the president proposes or that the president will be able to agree politically anything that Congress proposes. So essentially any improvement in the economy is the only thing that's going to drive the deficit down further. And if the economy doesn't perform as well as expected, it'll go up. But I think a deficit somewhere between $900 billion and $1 trillion, you know, is about what we should expect for 2012. So that's a significant change, but still leaves a deficit to be dealt with.
Well, Stan, let's talk about the debt ceiling. The president made a move right at the end of the calendar year to ask for an extension to a little bit more than almost, I think, $16.4 trillion. And Congress basically has a right of refusal, right? Can you walk us through the mechanics of this extension of the debt ceiling and what you think is going to play out in both chambers and with the White House?
Sure. Let's just talk about the process, the way it's supposed to work. This was part of the deal that they put in place in August. This is the same deal that led to the formation of the Anything But Super Committee that failed to come up with a deficit reduction plan. But the basic reason for that deal was that they had to raise the debt ceiling. They did it in three tranches. The first was an immediate increase of $400 billion. That was literally agreed upon as the president signed the legislation. The second was another $400 billion that was essentially agreed upon back in September. And then this additional request anticipated in that August budget deal, known as the Budget Control Act, the president requests up to $1.2 trillion in additional borrowing authority. And Congress can, if it wishes, move to disapprove it. That is, it's automatically approved unless Congress passes legislation within a specific time period to disapprove it. But there's virtually no chance of disapproval because the way it would have to work is the House would have to pass it, which is probably a certainty. The Senate would then have to pass it, which is very unlikely given the Democratic majority. And even if both houses of Congress passed this motion for disapproval, the president could then veto it, and then Congress, both houses of Congress, would require a two-thirds vote to override. There's not a two-thirds vote to override a bill declaring this month January, let alone something as controversial as debt ceiling. So anybody who's worried about the credit of the United States or whether auctions are going to be going on as planned of Treasury bills, bonds, and notes, don't be. I mean, this is a political exercise. The debt ceiling will be increased as the president requested and was anticipated back in August. This is a non-event other than politics.
It's kabuki theater, right?
Kabuki is a step up from what it actually is.
Well, let me talk to you a little bit so we manage to avoid any of the difficult topics in the debt ceiling negotiations, the super committee process this year. We kicked the can down the road, whatever analogy you want. We still have lots of sort of big-ticket items out there in order to close the deficit, reduce spending, and bring the budget a little closer to balance. Talk to me about some of what you think might happen on those big-ticket items, if anything, in 2012, and also what you see some of the key stakeholders who care so much about those items. What will they be doing to interact with the White House and Congress this year?
Well, let's start with the basics. Again, let me repeat that I don't expect much of anything to happen until after the election. That is in a lame duck session somewhere in November or December. Between now and the election in November, there are actually very few opportunities for hostage taking on budget issues. The big one coming up is the payroll tax extension that now needs to be done by the end of February. Otherwise, payroll taxes will go up. I expect it to be a big, big fight, but ultimately the payroll tax cut will be extended yet again, probably through the end of the year. That means that there really won't be much big fighting until we get to September 30. That's when fiscal 2012 begins and 2013 ends. Starts. So what you've got here is a situation where a month before the elections will be the next chance for a government shutdown. I find it hard to believe that it will come to that. That is, a month before the election, Republicans in the House in particular would try to force that issue, given especially what happened on the payroll tax fight this past time. But then the big-ticket issues really come up, the big-ticket items, as you called it. That is, the Bush-Obama tax cuts expired December 31st, 2012. Now, that's before the next Congress get sworn in is before the president takes the oath of office, whoever that might be. But it's December 31st, 2012. 2 days later, $1.2 trillion in spending cuts are supposed to start going into effect. That is January 2nd, 2013. These are the cuts that were triggered when the super committee failed, the so-called sequester. So in the space of 2 days, you could have some monumental changes in the deficit outlook. If the tax cuts aren't extended for anybody, and if these spending cuts go into effect, the projected deficit for 2012-2013 will fall to about $600 billion, and that's the point at which most economists would say, you know what, it, as a percentage of GDP, it's not a big deal. Let me tell you what I actually think is going to happen. I think that spending, that tax cut will be extended for, let's say, 6 months till June 30, and those spending cuts, the sequester, will be delayed until June 30, and so that the big fight will happen a year and a half from now and not at the end of the year.
Interesting. A year and a half from now, when, of course, we'll have at least a new Congress and perhaps a new occupant of the White House. So tell me a little bit about the politics on both sides of the political fence here and what each party will try and do in the budgetary gamesmanship to spin this in their direction for the election.
Yeah. Well, the big thing here is not so much, first of all, not to give the other side a victory. That is, Republicans don't want the president to be able to say that he succeeded in getting the GOP to back down on taxes and increase taxes. The Democrats don't want to be able to say that they knuckled under the GOP pressure on Medicare and Social Security. So the basic thing that's going to happen, the big politics of this year, is who can you blame for what isn't happening? You know, who can you blame for the stalemate? That's what's going to be going on. You've got the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party will be pushing every way they possibly can to prevent anything having to do with tax increases. Period. End of statement. That's all there is to it. The progressive wing of the Democratic Party will be fighting tooth and nail to prevent anything, any changes at all in Medicare and Social Security. And then in the midst of all that, you've got the defense community that will be fighting to prevent, delay, or mitigate the cuts, the big cuts in defense that would occur under the sequester. So essentially, the politics of this year are preventing things from happening, not pushing for anything big. And so groups like the Concord Coalition or the Committee for a Responsible Budget or the Deficit Hawks will have very, very, very little room to maneuver this year and probably very few people willing to listen to them.
Stan, you're always a little bit pessimistic about anything getting done. Tell me any sort of sliver of hope you see this year. I imagine that the House will at least get a budget resolution. Do you think the Senate will even make much of an attempt to get a budget resolution this year after a couple years of not making much progress there?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. The House will almost certainly be able to pass a budget resolution because budget resolutions don't do anything. They just promise to do something in the future. So it's easy to pass to vote for something symbolic that would, if implemented, cut Medicare or something like that, for example, and then not actually do the implementation legislation. I think if you're looking for action on the budget, the only way this is going to happen this year, that is 2012, is if there's an economic catastrophe of some kind that allows everybody to move from their established positions, that allows Democrats to, you know, vote for spending cuts they wouldn't otherwise vote for, and Republicans to vote for tax increases for the good of the country. But it's hard to see where that kind of catastrophe would come from or that it could be any worse than what we've seen in the last couple of years in Europe and, of course, within the United States. Short of that, the question to ask is there going to be any movement in the on legislation that might help the economy over the next year? And the answer probably is no on that as well. So essentially, the economy is on its own. Don't expect anything from Washington because it's just too much of a stalemate. I got to tell you, the one most interesting thing about this, from my perspective, is that right after the 2010 election, Wall Street was applauding, saying stalemate is great. It was great when we had a stalemate in 95 and 96 between Gingrich and Clinton. We want it again. Well, they've got it again, and now there's a lot of complaints on Wall Street that Washington's just not paying any attention. Interesting change.
Wall Street, like many people in a relationship, always wants what they can't have or don't currently have, right?
Or want to think back to a much nicer time.
That's right. That's right. The golden age of the past. Well, we've been joined by Stan Collender from Corvus. Stan, hit us with the info on your new website before we wrap up.
Well, it's still called capitalgainsandgames.com. Capitalgainsandgames.com. It's now just called Stan Collender's. Capital Gains and Games. It's now my own blog as opposed to my sharing it with three other people. And I did that because I thought that I had a voice, that sole voice, that, that could make a difference on budget and fiscal policy and Wall Street issues. It's still capitalgainsandgames.com, and I really appreciate your asking.
All right. Well, we appreciate having you on. We'll have you back soon to talk about the budget process. We'll be back in just a minute with more Capital Thinking.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
If you are looking for both an inside and insightful look at what you're not seeing in media coverage of today's legal, business, and policy battles, tune into In the Court of Public Opinion with host Jim Haggerty. What happens in the public arena affects us all. Whether you're following the latest high-profile court case, corporate crisis, or are just interested in government and policy, be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. The witnesses are ready and the jury seated. So join us for our next session in the Court of Public Opinion.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel, or listen on demand to our archived shows.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's K-O-Neill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back. We are joined now by Mark Ellison, a colleague of mine in the technology practice at Patton Boggs, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the high-tech industry right now. Mark has a great deal of experience there advising technology, communications, and utilities clients on a broad array of legal, regulatory, and business issues. Mark, welcome back to the show, and I want to start by asking you about this new system of Internet domain names that is just now getting started up. I already don't own KevinO'Neill.com. It sounds like I need to go out and get some new domain names before somebody grabs them up. Tell us about what's going on.
Well, Kevin, it's a whole new regime that's starting. The application process begins this month on January 12th. And it's the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, also known as ICANN, that is going to start accepting applications for new what are called generic top-level domain names. Everybody's familiar with .com and .org and .edu, which is, you know, the group of numbers and a few nation-specific top-level domains, such as .ca for Canada. But what's going to happen over the next 4 months is you're going to be able to apply for, instead of KevinO'Neill.com, you could apply for .KevinO'Neill, or Ford can apply for .Ford, or somebody can apply for .shoes or .golf. It's really going to be an unlimited world in terms of what name you want to have after that .. So there's going to be a bit of a land rush, although there's a lot of cost involved in this, and it's not an easy hoop to jump through.
Interesting. I know, you know, one of the things I had read about, Mark, over the last few weeks was that companies are sort of getting out there and organizations are sort of staking their presence. I had read that Penn State had actually gone out and bought a couple of domain names related to the scandal, the child abuse scandal there, because they were afraid that these new domains would allow somebody to buy those sites and criticize them. So tell me about what corporations and organizations are sort of doing to adjust to this new sort of land grab. It's like the Oklahoma land grab of the Internet.
Well, I think they're doing two things. In some cases, they're going to be filing for their own names. As I said, I think somebody that's like a .Ford or a .Chevrolet, you know, they may apply for their own names, or they, you know, somebody may apply for .Cars. So I think there's this going to be approached from two angles. One is, do I want to have my own name as my domain name? So that's question number one. Question number two is, if I don't file for that, do I have to be watching to be assured that somebody else doesn't apply for .Ford or .General Motors or whatever? And the answer is yes, of course you do. So there will be a big process of making sure that people are not name squatting and holding names hostage. There is a significant cost involved. It's about it's a 300-page application, or rules, with a very significant part of that being the application. So there's a significant cost up front of probably $50,000 to $100,000 for the application preparation. And then there's an application fee with ICON of $185,000. And then once the name is granted, because it is a unique top-level domain name, the company will have to do its own registry and supporting of that name, so that everything that they do, that they, you know, the lower level domain names that they want to put with that, they would control through their own registries, and that's not an inexpensive process. So it's not going to be for anybody, but I think major corporations, associations, trade groups, and certainly certain areas of products. You know, dot drugs, dot shoes, that type of thing, may want to secure their own names and have their own registries.
That's very interesting, Mark. Now, I know there were some recent congressional hearings on this subject in the late fall. Tell me a little bit about what the congressional concerns are about how this process is playing out.
Well, I think the concerns are coming from U.S. corporations that are afraid that they're going to have to make this investment of time and money to either secure their own names or be very active in monitoring the process so that no one attacks their own names. I think there's also concern from law enforcement and other you know, other agencies about their ability to track the use of names if the registries are private. So there have been a couple of hearings recently on the Hill. As a matter of fact, today, Senator Rockefeller, who chairs the Commerce Committee on the Senate side, sent a letter to ICON asking them to stall and hold off on the process. But what we're understanding, this process has gone on and been in the planning works for a number of years, and they do not want to stall this process at this time. There are a great many companies worldwide and even countries that will begin to have their own top-level domain name that have invested a lot of time and money in this process already. So I think it's going to move forward, although there is pressure from the U.S. For it to be delayed. I'll be surprised if it is delayed. I think it's going to start on January 12th. And that window, by the way, is open until April 12th for anyone who wants to file. And certainly anybody that is out there that is concerned about if they have a corporate name, whether it's Coca-Cola, Coke, Kleenex, whatever it may be, they're going to want to either file for themselves or at least be assured that nobody else is grabbing that name and sitting on it. And in terms of protecting your own name, we don't know what the cost of that is going to be right now, but based on past experience, we don't think that will be a very expensive process.
All right, so it won't be like the $100,000 that you mentioned for some of these other things.
But no, it won't be in that range.
Talk to me a little bit more about what
companies can do to protect themselves from interlopers or squatters that are trying to grab a name or a brand and hold it hostage going forward on this this new territory?
Well, there's a couple of different ways you can do it. One, of course, would be to file for yourself. I mean, again, if you're Kimberly-Clark and you own Kleenex and you want to protect Kleenex, you can apply for .Kleenex, and presumably you'll get it because you're the holder of that trademark. Another way is to just file an objection, watching the registry as these applications come in, and filing objections to the to anybody that might try to file a claim for a name that is a trademark name. And then also they would have the normal rights of a trademark owner to go against an individual or a company that might secure an infringing name under your more standard trademark enforcement rights.
All right.
So there are several things to do, but certainly everybody needs to be aware of this and be watching this process as it moves forward if they've got a company or...
We're going to wrap things up there. We've been joined by Mark Ellison talking about the new internet domain registration process. This week's Capital Thinking. We'll be back next week with more.
Thank you for joining us for Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. We hope to have you join us again for more insight from Washington. We're here every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network.